comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blitzen and all his reindeer are pulling on the rein. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Here comes Santa Claus.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Mars.
See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stock to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the house of pain. Back to the house of pain.
Hello everyone and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic to cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are B, the entertainment is grade A, and I am your host Jason Jackanetti, and I'm joined by my dad, Mr. Al Jackanetti.
Hi Jay, on a very cold day here in Brewster, New York, I guess we're going to be doing Santa's Sleigh, what some people would consider to be a quintessential Christmas movie.
Yes, that's right folks, this is your special Christmas episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, and we'll get to it right after this.
Grandpa, I want the truth about Christmas.
If it's the truth you want, then it's the scary truth you're gonna have.
According to the Book of Claus, Santa, Satan's only son, lost a bet and was forced to spread Christmas cheer. But now, all bets are off.
Santa?
Yes, there is a Santa Claus. Ho, ho, ho's.
Santa Claus is not a myth or a legend. He's real. Only he's not bearing gifts and presents anymore.
Christmas can sure scare the dickens out of people.
He's scary yet educational.
I'm just trying to spread a little Yuletide fear.
Are you saying Santa is offing everyone who's naughty and nice?
Oh my God!
You shot Santa?
Run away! Santa's on the loose!
This holiday season...
Ho, ho, ho!
Lock your doors. Bolt the windows.
Aw, Grandpa got run over by a reindeer.
Everyone stand back. Things are about to get a little messy.
And block the chimney. Because naughty or nice, Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa's sleigh.
Go ahead, kids. Let's see what Santa got you.
I hate children.
Santa's Sleigh was released December 20th, 2005, with a 78-minute running time. It was distributed by Media 8 Entertainment, which is a subsidiary of Lionsgate Home Entertainment. It was written and directed by David Steinman. We open on Christmas Eve, and the Masons, a wealthy, dysfunctional family, are sitting down to a Christmas dinner. when Santa Claus, played by none other than pro wrestler Bill Goldberg, comes down the chimney and kills them all in hilarious fashion. Now, let's just talk about who's at that dinner, because you'll start noticing a theme once I start reading the names to you. So, at the dinner, the patriarch is James Caan, who is, I think he's uncredited, I mean, he's credited, but he's, like, uncredited in, like, everything. He's clearly James Caan, though.
But, yeah, his name does not appear in either the credits or in the special features at the end.
Yeah. And his wife is played by Fran Drescher, from the Nanny fame. Rebecca Gayhart is Gwen. Chris Kattan plays Jason. Alicia Loren and Annie Sorrell play the twin. I guess, or they're supposed to be sisters. They look like twins, but they're not actually related to each other. Beth and Taylor. Now, you might be saying to yourself, Jay, that sounds like a lot of Jewish people to be portraying a Catholic family. And yes, Goldberg is also a practicing Jew as well. Yes, that is the entire point of this movie. I think I would say 90% of the cast is Jewish. Well, everyone who premised it, the director, the writer, people who worked on it, and we'll get to all that stuff, but yes, that is one of the things this movie is known for. So, he comes down, he kills them. It is the opening of this movie. I am hard-pressed to think of a funnier opening of a movie. Maybe Amazon Woman on the Moon. Amazon Woman on the Moon has a hysterical opening with Arsenio Hall. It's very different, falling out the window stuff. But this has a great opening. I don't mean a great opening like the opening of Gladiator, which is phenomenal. I mean, like, you're watching this going, what are we watching? Right? Because, and to be honest with you, the opening of this movie is the absolute best part of this movie. If you have seen nothing but the first, 8 minutes of this movie,
right,
you've seen the best parts of this movie. Obviously, we're here discussing it today, but the best part of this movie is the opening. What I love when he comes down the chimney and Fran Drescher plays Virginia. She goes, Santa? And he goes, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, which is, of course, a very famous line. And he puts the carving, what do you call that? Not pitchfork, right? The carving fork.
Yeah.
Yeah. He puts it through James Caan's hands into the table, and James Caan's got both hands hooked to the table with the two things, and he can't get it off. He's trying to bite it with his mouth. So, you know, I mean, James Caan's he's been around a very long time. I mean, he was in The Godfather and stuff like that, you know. So here he is trying to pretend to take fake prosthetic carving utensils out of his hand as Bill Goldberg is setting people on fire. He sets Fran Drescher's hair on fire. And then he Chris Kattan tries to do some karate, and he punts him across the room. He kicks the dog across there. He kills one of the sisters with the leg of the table. And then he takes the leg off of the turkey that they're supposed to be eating, and he shoves it down James Caan's throat and kills him with it. It is hysterical. You're watching, and if you only caught that, let's say you had no idea what you're watching, and that's what you saw, you'd be like, what? It's exactly the response. So,
yeah, it's not exactly a tour de force for Goldberg. It's more like a tour de farce. But again, it's exactly what I'm sure the producers and the director wanted for the opening. It's definitely an eye-catcher, but like Jason said, the rest of the movie is pretty formulaic. And I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that was... they wanted to hit you with everything. And that's where all the stars that are names, except for... we'll see when down we go. But again, that's where most of the name, quote-unquote, talent falls. They came in, they shot it on, like, an afternoon. They got a lunch out of it, and they went home. Now, this was all filmed up in Canada, so they probably might have been filming other things at the time or just had them in. All right. So, where are we? So, he does that, kills all the people, and then it goes... Okay, so riding his sleigh driven by his hell deer, Santa arrives at Hell Township and decimates the locals in various themed holiday-themed ways. He runs Mrs. Talbot, yes, her last name's Talbot, yes,
right.
Off the road, he also stabs a mugger with a sharpened candy cane. I love that he's eating the candy cane, and the guy goes to mug him, and he kills him with it.
Yeah, the old lady... That's
Mrs. Talbot. Yeah, yeah.
Mrs. Talbot. That she is as much of a caricature of an old lady as you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, every stereotypical old lady mannerism and whatever.
She's smoking. She swears at them. She's rude.
Yeah.
She's just. You don't care. I mean, when she dies, you're like, yep,
fine,
exactly. You want her to die. I think that's one of the things too. Is like, you're not supposed to be rooting for Santa Claus in this because Santa Claus is a demon. But you're kind of rooting for Bill Goldberg to kill as many people as possible. And we'll get to one of that. So he slaughters the occupant. Where are we? So, meanwhile, teenager Nicholas Yulson, who is living with his crazy grandfather, played by Robert Culp. I told you there's one other name in this.
Right.
Who is a crackpot and an inventor who has built a bunker in his basement to survive Christmas. So, when Nicholas asks his grandfather why he hates Christmas, he's shown the Book of Claus, which reveals the origin of Santa Claus. Apparently, Santa Claus was the result of a virgin birth by Satan and Erica. Just as supposed to be mirrored like Jesus' birth, obviously, at the same time. But this is obviously Santa is somewhat of an antichrist.
Yeah, you know, Jay, I mean, Catholic grammar school and Catholic high school and Catholic college. And nowhere in that catechism did it say that Santa was the son of Satan.
Well, I think, obviously, some liberties are being taken here. I'm also going to pretty much guarantee you the writer slash director of this film did not go to Catholic school. David Steinman did not do that. It doesn't matter. The whole point is that it sets up the idea that Santa is a demon. In fact, they play with that in the title. It says Satan's sleigh, and then it bounces, and it says Santa's sleigh. Christmas was known as the day of slaying for Santa until the year 1005 A.D., when an angel defeated him in a curling match. And there is nothing, I think, more Canadian than having a curling match. They didn't have a few Molson Ices, I guess, out there, too. And sentenced him to deliver presents on Christmas for 1,000 years. So let's see. It's 2005. Time is up. That means Santa's free to kill again in 2005. So the next place that Santa stops is the local strip club. Right. Frequented by Pastor Timmons. Now, Pastor Timmons, you may know as Dave Thomas, yes, from SCTV and all different things. He's very famous kind of thing. But he's the minister, and he's kind of crooked. And the funny part is they show him in church, and everyone has to give money. And he takes all the money from the donations to the strip club.
Right.
So he manages somehow to survive the massacre. But the best is he sets the place on fire at the end, right? He sets the coals on fire and throws them. And there's just naked women running around all around here. I mean, it gets a strip club, so, and it went up real quick. And I don't think anybody is too, you know, surprised that the strip club is probably not initially the best built building in town, or that it has a lot of easily accessible exits or windows. So it went up pretty quick and everyone died. And then the best is that they're in the church the next day, right, and he's like, let's mourn. And he goes through all their names, but it's all their stripper names. You know, it's so funny. But again, you know, we're not talking about, again, if you're asking yourself, is this like, high theater? No, it's clearly not. This is not Hamlet, but it's funny for what it is, and to me, that always found it funny. So,
well, I think that that's exactly what the director wanted to do, and they accomplished their task. I mean, you can't get any more offbeat and off the wall than this movie.
Yeah. So Santa then comes down the street where he bumps into a few Hasidic Jews, right? And which I thought, again, it's funny. If you're from New York, if you go down to New York City or anything like that, you will have more of a chance of maybe encountering someone who's a Hasidic Jew than you would maybe in other parts of the country. But it's just funny because he walks back and then he like just pushes through them as he's walking by to the Jewish delicatessen, which is closed on Christmas. So he breaks into the owner. That's what's funny, but the owner, who's Mr. Green, right, is played by Sal Rubinek. He's there in the deli. So he breaks in. And then he kills him with the menorah, right? He hangs him on the wall with a menorah. Again, it's all played for camp and for laughs. It's, again, I mean, again, he's killing people. But again, there's nothing that's super serious here. This is not like, there's no deeper meaning to any of this stuff. It's just, you know, they're having fun what they're doing. So upon arriving at the delicatessen, this is post Santa's killing him, Nicholas is taken to the police station for questioning about the murder. He's kind of bailed out / picked up, because they didn't really bail him out, I guess, per se. Like, they kind of arrest him,
right,
but then they kind of don't arrest him. They also pick up all the Hasidic Jews off the street, and they pile them all in the car. There's like 6 people in the back of this truck by his girlfriend / friend, Mary Mac McKenzie, just before Santa arrives and kills everyone in the entire, kills all the officers, kills them all. Very Terminator-esque. He goes through and kills them all. So Santa's pursuing Nicholas and Mac in a police car, but they're able to escape thanks to the shotgun that Matt and Mac's truck that her father leaves behind. They flee to the Mr. Yulson's bunker with Santa in pursuit. Nick and Mac manage to escape on the snowmobiles, but Grandpa's run over by Hell's reindeer. So again, they're the Hell Deer. So Grandpa, instead of Grandma, was run over by a reindeer, which again is another play on all this. And it's funny because it's Robert Culp. Like, you know, you're like, oh, okay. Like, you see actors who you've seen before. They're not, you know, Goldberg is a wrestler. I mean, I've watched Goldberg wrestle tons and tons of time. Even that farce of a match at Survivor Series with Brock Lesnar where people were injured and whatever. Right? But the whole point is, they're actors. Robert Culp's an actor.
Right.
He's made things. You know, besides this.
Well, Robert Culp, for those of you who might not remember the name, Robert Culp was in a couple of, in one especially classic Outer Limits episode, The Man with the Glass Hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, he was paired with Bill Cosby in I Spy.
Right.
And he was also the father of on Everybody Loves Raymond, the opposite.
Oh, yeah,
of,
yeah. Right, he's the wife's mother,
wife's father.
Right. I mean, what I'm saying is, but he's done other things.
Oh no, but if you look at his movie career, he must have 50 movies.
Sure. So the two teens hide in the local high school, hoping that Santa's power will end once Christmas ends. But they are eventually forced to confront him in the gym, which turns out to be a ice hockey rink. So they're almost killed by Santa on a Zamboni, which is hysterical. Zambonis don't go that fast, but are saved by Grandpa, who just came back from the dead. But shockingly, he's the angel who beat him in the curling match in the beginning of the story. At this point, folks, you're going to buy it. Like, if you are saying, I don't buy that he's... If you believed everything to this point, you're like, I don't buy that Robert Culp is the angel from 1,000 years ago, then you have to ask yourself why you're watching this. Seriously. Like, if you have to just buy into it. So they are going to... So now they're going to have the second... You know, they're going to do the same thing over again. But, of course, Goldberg cheats and throws Grandpa into the pit, which is funny because that's all happening in there, right? And it's all these fires of hell. Outside, one of the generators exploded and set the building on fire. For really set the building on fire. And they wound up losing their trailer and one of the things that were happening. All right. So, where are we here? So he's saved by Grandpa, who's actually the angel who originally defeated and sent Santa. With Christmas over and his powers gone, Santa flees to his sled, but his Hell Deer is shot down by Mac's father with a bazooka. Because they're out shooting things. It's just, again, you have to see it. But Pastor Timmons is stuffed into a Santa suit. The Santa suit is from the police chief. He steals the suit off the police chief. Timmons is out, he's drunk. Or not drunk, he knocks him out. He stuffs him in the Santa suit. And this way, when they shoot the Hell Deer and the sled crashes to the ground and burns, they find a body, which of course is now Pastor Timmons' burnt up body in a Santa suit. So they think they've killed him. So what happens is, now cut to Winnipeg airport, which looks a lot like any other office. I can't imagine an airport looks like that, but it might have been Winnipeg airport. It looked tiny, yeah. Kind of thing. I mean, it's not postage stamp size like some places, but, and there's Bill Goldberg dressed like a biker. Like, and he's, and that's what he's supposed to be. And he buys a ticket from Winnipeg to the North Pole. So then the credits roll, and there's all little silly animations through the credits of like that look like the stuff from the book. And he's seen looking at, and then Santa's looking over his naughty list. And then it comes up and it says, "Who's next?" Which is, of course, Bill Goldberg's what he says during wrestling. He always said, "Who's next?" Right? They knew what they were doing here. This is funny. And again, some of you are thinking like, Jay, this is from 2005. Like, I don't even remember this. Yeah. This is straight direct to video. This is what B-movies became. B-movies don't play in movie theaters anymore. I know Dad and I have talked about how some movies, even major hits, are B-movies because of their genre movies. And genre movies always were. But genre movies now can be bona fide major hits. I mean, we were just talking before this about like War of the Planet of the Apes and like a Spider-Man Homecoming. I mean, those are going to be big-time movies. Those are genre movies. But those are that's what sells now. You can make anything. I mean... Look back at 2016 and look at some of the biggest grossing movies of the year, right? I mean, they could be genre movies. They're not all movies anymore. It's not all just dramas and or whatever. They're genre movies. I mean, Civil War made a ton of money this year. Whether you like Civil War or not, it made a ton of money. I mean, to me, Mad Max Fury Road was the best movie of the year. It's just insane. And what is that movie? But explosions and things happening. But it's, you know, it's gut wrenching. So. Okay, so we got a little bit of trivia here. We got here. The old book that explains the origin of Santa Claus is written in Icelandic. Some believe that parts of the Santa mythos were taken from the Norse gods legends, well, which is true, which explains some of it. The film was this. Tommy Lister, right? He's the gas station attendant there who he buys the gum from. I never heard of this gum.
He was Zeus.
Zeus, yes, he's another wrestler. But you know, he was also Zeus in No Holds Barred, right? Which is where he got the role. Obviously, there's a whole lot of stuff that's just silly about this movie. It's a lot of fun. We thought this would be the perfect Christmas episode to cap off our first year here at Bots, Bugs, and Babes. It is super, super silly.
Well, you know, Jay, I mean, Die Hard is also considered a Christmas movie.
Yes, it is. Die Hard is the best Christmas movie of all time, but, and people who don't believe that are just wrong.
But you wouldn't do it on Bots, Bugs, and Babes.
Well, you know, but Die Hard's a perfect example. Die Hard, the first Die Hard, which we saw for my birthday, that means in the middle of July, we saw the sneak preview after we saw Big, which was a huge hit. Tom Hanks' movie Big was a huge, huge hit at the time. And the sneak preview was Die Hard, and we saw that. Let's go real local, Jefferson Valley Mall, right? That's for Luke. And we wound up seeing that, and that was a B movie. That was Bruce Willis, who was a TV star.
Right.
There were no stars per se. I mean, who's the biggest star in that movie? It's the dancer guy.
Oh, and then you had Alan Rickman.
Right, but he wasn't
a bad guy. He wasn't a known
but he wasn't,
guy.
Right, but he wasn't known. Alan Rickman was just coming into his own. Right, he became a much bigger star later.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis wasn't a star. Right now, if you said you had a movie with Alan Rickman Bruce Willis, you're talking about a major hot. Well, Alan Rickman has passed away, but at the time, that would have been a major thing recently. At 1980, whatever, they weren't stars.
No.
I mean, the guy who plays the cop, he winds up being the cop. He plays a cop on Family Matters. They're TV actors. This was a TV kind of thing. What's his face? The dancer. What's his name? Who plays the blonde? Carl. Not Carl. Carl's a brother.
Oh, Bruce and Cop?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Whatever his name was. He was famous for being a dancer. He wasn't even an actor. So, I mean, that's a great B movie, but again, I don't think anyone thinks of being a B, but once Die Hard hit. Die Hard 2 was a major hit.
And it turned out to be a franchise.
Yeah, I mean, but what we're saying is this is a B movie, right? This is the home version, home video B movie kind of stuff that we talk about here, and it's very silly. And I think I didn't think we'd get much sillier than we could have at Thanksgiving with the giant claw, but this is sillier. At least there was no puppets.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's a few other points I wanted to make when I'm watching a movie, because I watch a movie from a critical point of view, and not so much, especially if the movie is a little offbeat. There was a lot of product placements in here. There was crushed soda, mug root beer, Pepsi, Spam.
I mean, I wonder if it's product placement or just what they had on hand.
That could have been what the buffet was.
Remember we talked about that in Them? There was cracker box on the shelf?
Yep.
And you're like, I wonder if that was their product. Like, it probably just was what they needed, a cracker box. And they went and got a cracker box.
Yeah, from Ritz, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying, maybe this wasn't... I guarantee you they didn't get a whole lot of money from mug, root beer, or crushed soda.
No.
But I'm saying it could have just been what they had.
Whatever the props. The other thing was that, you know, this movie had a lot of innuendos. There was the gun that Robert Culp uses turns into a transformer. At least that's how I perceive it. He takes the gun. He's what gun? And it looked like.
Oh no, it's not a gun. He gives him. He goes, the best presents are practical presents, and he gives him money. Like, what is this? And it turns into a gun, or it turns into a thing, a rocket launcher.
Right.
But that's, again, the whole movie was just silly little things. I think a lot of it's callbacks to. You know, there's definitely in jokes. There's jokes you have to get, and then there's the broad jokes. But again, if you don't know who Bill Goldberg is, like if you're not a wrestling fan, you might have seen Bill Goldberg, because Bill Goldberg was a huge mega star. He was the guy during the WCW WBF at the time war.
Yeah,
right. I mean, he's like Stone Cold Steve Austin. People don't know Stone Cold Steve Austin, who've never seen him wrestle, know who he is. He was on TV. He's been in movies. Goldberg's a guy you've seen on TV as commercials.
I mean, Goldberg could have been a really good football player. He just didn't have the talent. He got hurt too. Well, he played for the University of Georgia.
Yeah.
He was drafted by the Atlanta Falcons.
And he lives in Atlanta. He's been there his whole life.
I mean,
but he got hurt though. He didn't play like a season. He played a few seasons.
Oh, yeah.
And then he got hurt. And then what happened was he wanted to do something. And he trains mixed martial arts. You know, he's a real honest to God, like, tough guy. He's not a tough guy like you see in movies. I'm trying to think. Who are the actors that always were like, they were tough guys, quote unquote, on the screen, but
Steven Seagal.
Yeah, well, no, but Steven Seagal actually, when he was in shape, and I don't mean round, was actually a martial artist. But I'm saying is, they were guys who, like, I'm talking about guys, like, even back into, like, the 60s and 70s, who were continued to be real tough guys, but they were, like, you know, they were... You know, could easily
like Don Johnson,
but guys like that who pretend like they're big. You know, Goldberg's not that. Goldberg's a real big dude, and he's huge too. And that's the great part of it is he's standing next to people. And again, usually in movies, they got to make guys look bigger. He's like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, he stands next to me. You're like, oh my God. Like, Hogan's huge. He's 6'7". Yeah. Goldberg's 6'5", 6'6". He's a monster.
It was funny because when we were thinking about doing this, one of the things that just happened about 2 weeks ago on Sports Center, they interviewed him. And to see what he was doing now, he's just turned 50 years old, and he looks in great shape. And
well, at Survivor Series, he wrestled Brock Lesnar in one of the worst matches I've ever seen in my entire life.
Right.
And there's rumors about why that happened, but this is not a wrestling podcast. The idea being is Goldberg looks like, I mean, his beard is gray, but he's always had a shaved head, and now he's married with a son who's like, you know, like 11 years old kind of thing. He looks great for his age. Because you see other wrestlers who are that age and they look like, you know, 10 miles of bad road,
right?
You know, or, you know, 50 pounds of crap in a 5 pound bag.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of thing. So, but
what it, well, there were a couple of other things. I mean, you know, we're talking about Goldberg. Is that another one of the items that's in the movie that caught my eye was that his belt buckle that he has on his Santa suit looks like his WWF championship belt. I mean, it doesn't say W, but it looks like it. So that could have been a pay into doing that also. One of the other things that in a movie like this that you have to accept and is all the cursing that goes on. And
I mean
serious cursing. And I don't find that funny. You can, if you, like, in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there is a scene where
He's at the counter.
He's at the counter.
Yeah, and every other word is F.
But it's funny because it's
at that point in the movie, he has now gone through like more than anyone should ever have to endure. And the problem is, especially who he's even saying it to, who's Mrs. Poole from the old, what do you call it? She's from First Bill's Day Off.
But again, when it's done that way, it is a funny bit. But in this movie, the cursing is so prolific throughout the movie that after a while, it's just not funny anymore.
But I think that's also, too, them thinking they're playing to an audience, trying to, like, kind of keep it a little more juvenile, you know, kind of thinking that that's whatever. Anyway, so all that aside, I got one more email to read as we're going to close out the year here on Bots, Bugs, and Babes. And this one comes from, I know there are at least 5 people listening to the show. We've gotten emails from 5 different people. If they're still listening, I don't know. But I know Luke still listens, and this one's from Luke. And it says, "We're going to need a bigger roasting pan. Jay, just listen to the Thanksgiving episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes featuring the Giant Claw. With a reputation that likes of which this film has, it was good to hear it got a fair shake from you and Dad. Because, as you guys said, it is ultimately not a bad little movie. Just one with really, really glaring flaws with the monster. And in this sort of creature feature vid, the monster is what people remember. Let's face the facts. The marionette approach to monster making is not entirely without merit. Rodan was mentioned, as was Mothra. And these monsters, along with pretty much every other flying Daikaiju, are puppets with airborne, when airborne, although not specifically marionettes as we think of them, which is to say a stringed or wired puppet. Instead, being a mix of rod puppetry and wires. The real proof of concept of this style of monster creation is seen in Son of Godzilla, where all the enemy monsters are full-wired marionettes at all times. The three Kamakuras, the giant mantises,
right.
Manti, okay? And then Cucamonga, the giant spider. Whenever you think of the story of Son of Godzilla, these four monsters are wonderfully realized, and are able to interact with Godzilla and Ming-It effectively. But they possess the strength of pretty much all of the Showa monsters. They have a great design. Swap the Giant Claw and Camaracus, and you have a movie which will be much better remembered, as far as I'm concerned. Which I think we talked about that.
Right.
There's more to this. I think we talked about that. If Harryhausen had taken this film instead of going to Venice to film 20 Million Miles to Earth, I think we would have gotten probably the Jupiterian or a form of the Jupiterian, right? Because that was what he wanted to do. He had this idea. And I think the movie might have been better remembered.
But just think of the Rock in Seven Voyages of Sinbad and how that looks and how realistic it looks. I mean, that's the type of bird that was needed in the...
Yeah, what I'm saying, I think we would have gotten something a little different.
Yeah.
And I think that's what... And Luke makes a good point there. As far as the giant claw and Rodan, they do have some similarities besides the superficial flying monster shtick. There is a mystery as the creature's identity and nature and the very concept of something so massive being able to move so fast are plot points. And to be fair, both films do have a standard methodology of destroying monsters from their region and era. The giant claw is put down by a scientific might of the American ingenuity, whereas Rodans are defeated by the cooperation of technology and nature, with the JSDF causing the volcanic eruption, which brings them both down. It's a really good point, too. You don't think about it because you think the Rodans die in the thing, but it was caused by them. Still, the giant claw remains entirely watchable, a fun diversion for an afternoon. It opens itself up to good-natured riffing, but that's okay. I'd rather watch a film which was betrayed by its budget than one which had a big budget and phoned it in any day, i.e. anything pretty much made nowadays. Thanks for the fun episode. Looking forward to the crawling eye, a.k.a. the Marty Feldman story. Thank you, Luke. Once again, my brother has a way with words, and he does like to throw his bits in there. And of course, if you're interested in hearing Luke, the Earth Destruction Directive podcast is a great Daikaiju podcast. He's got tons of stuff. I don't know what Luke has talked to me about, like all these movies coming up and what's going to happen and stuff. And I'll be honest with you, is that, I mean, whenever his episodes drop, I listen to him immediately because I know it's going to be something good. There's usually a little bit of, he takes it very serious. He takes his Daikaiju seriously. And we take our giant monster seriously here, although, you know, this movie got a little bit of, slap. But again, there's no giant monster here. I guess Goldberg's kind of a giant. He's big. Anyway, so folks, this is the last episode for 2016. We'll be back at you in 2017. We got a whole bunch of stuff planned. Don't be surprised if you're going to start seeing, we pride ourselves on trying to get out 13 episodes a year. We did get 13 episodes out this year. There might be more than 13 episodes coming out. We may have some special edition stuff. We haven't all worked all that out yet. We've laid out our end, but again, we're always looking for special stuff like that. We're always trying to, make the content better. So if you want to write into us, you Santa Slay is your favorite movie of all time. You've never seen it. Now you watch it and you're like, hey, I need that 78 minutes of my life back. Whatever it might be, botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. Hit us up. Let us know. If you have suggestions, anything like that, we'll love to hear from you. And of course, folks, I hope everyone has a happy and safe holiday and a happy and safe new year. Whatever you might celebrate or don't celebrate, it doesn't matter to me. All I know is just, we got to take care of each other and use your brains for, use your head for something else aside and holding up your hat, as I tell my students. So, anything else, Dad?
No, nothing. I'm just glad it was a nice short movie.
Yeah. Okay.
And, Merry Christmas to everyone out there, and we'll have a happy new year also.
Yeah. And so we're going to be back in January. We'll come back mid-January. And the movie we're coming back with is a Hammer movie. Which I know some of you are thinking, a Hammer movie? What Hammer movie are people talking about? The Abominable Snowman, a.k.a. The Abominable Snowman of the Himalayas, which was also at one point known as The Snow Creature. But we're not doing 1954 as The Snow Creature. That movie, horrible. We're not doing that. Okay? Not now. Anyway, so from all of us here at Box Bugs and Babes, have a great and happy new year. Have a great, happy holiday season. And keep those cards and letters coming. And keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at 2TrueFreaks.com. EarthDestructionDirective.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?